I'm Jesse Eden with the Hoopa Valley Dispatch for the KHSU Magazine.
We're not museum Indians. We still practice our language, our cultural practices.
Margot Robbins is the Indian Education Director for Klamath Trinity School District. Thank you for letting me join you out here in the Hoopa Valley. Can you explain to folks what an Indian Education Director does?
We develop curriculum based on the history and culture of the local tribes, and they are aligned to English Language Arts Common Core standards. I also do projects with kids. We take them out to gather traditional food and medicine and to learn about the water issues affecting our river. I do professional development for teachers, other staff, and administrators so that they have more insight into this place where they are teaching Native students.
Sounds like a pretty well-rounded education that you're trying to offer here. What are some of the highlights of that effort?
Oh, there's so many highlights to working in this place and for this district. We have 87% Native American students, primarily Hoopa, Yurok, and Karuk students. And it is really fulfilling to be able to teach them about our past and about this place, the history of our people, that our history did not start with European contact. Our history went back thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
What is your tribal affiliation, you personally?
I am a Yurok tribal member, and I have just a little bit of Hoopa blood.
The education that you're describing, that you're hoping to share with the students, and then the professional development for the instructors here, it's not your generic kind of educational approach. What is your motivation for sharing culture in a space like a public school?
My motivation is to make this place that we live a better place. I feel like a lot of people have lost who they are as Native people, their identity as Native people, and are trying to, you know, find a place where they fit. And the more that we can relearn the traditions of our people, the healthier we will be. Two generations back for me in my grandmother's time was the boarding school era. And the purpose of the boarding schools was to wipe out our identity as Indian people. And they were almost successful, but there were those that held on to it. And I'm so thankful for those keepers of the traditions that, you know, they held on to it despite, you know, all the things that they had to go through. And so we are reviving those teachings.
It's a tremendous example of strength. Just incredible to me what people have had to endure, and that traditions continue to be lived even through that kind of horrendous experience. And, you know, it's not as if that colonial incursion has fully come to an end. A lot of people use the term intergenerational trauma.
Right.
What's your perspective, having your relatives not that long ago having gone through this experience?
My grandmother didn't actually go to a boarding school. Her and her sister hid out in the creek bed so that the soldiers couldn't find them, and their mom would bring them food. And so they escaped the boarding school at that time. What the boarding schools tried to take away, we can now bring back through the public school system. Our school district embraces the teaching of Native culture and place-based learning and hands-on project-based learning. They have adopted the Hoopa, Yurok, Karuk Indian Land Tenure Curriculum that was developed for our school district, and it is aligned to English Language Arts Common Core standards. It's supplemented with field trips and guest speakers and hands-on projects.
Can you tell me about some of that curriculum, ways in which some of these Common Core type things are addressed from a cultural lens?
Mm-hmm. The curriculum teaches the same kind of skills that, say, who in Mifflin would teach, but it has different content. So, for example, when our students are reading a story that would be locally applicable, it might be of a young boy on his first hunting trip or a young girl going to gather seaweed with her grandma. And they have all the comprehension questions that would normally be associated with texts. They have to make inferences. There are vocabulary lessons. At the lower grade levels, where students are learning to identify the names of the letters and the sounds that they make, there are things from our homelands that they identify. For example, if they're learning the sound of the letter S, they have to identify sturgeon and salmon and things that start with S that are applicable in our home territory. There are lessons on traditional foods that come from this place. They go on walks to identify medicine plants, and they have their own little books that they color according to the proper colors for that plant. They learn about things like, where is the center of the world for your tribe? Each of our local tribes has a specific place, a village that is the center of the world. And so they learn things like that, or where is the first salmon ceremony held? And so it is all applicable to our people, not only historical knowledge, but living culture today. We're not museum Indians. We still practice our language, our cultural practices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes so much sense just listening to you talking about learning that is appropriate culturally for one's community and not some general kind of curriculum that kids might be reading stories that have no connection to the life that they live or that their family members have ever lived. You're providing this opportunity for kids to not only get more grounded in their own culture and be more connected with their community, but the learning is just going to be that much easier because it's appropriate to their place.
And they're interested in it. They are interested in it, and it helps them to understand who they are, and that builds their self-esteem. You know, it also helps them to understand why we're facing these terrible social issues in our community, like drugs and alcohol. You know, it's not that it just happened for no reason. In the boarding school time and in the time of genocide, people lived through horrible, terrible things, and they wanted to forget. And alcohol was introduced into our community. And we had no resistance to alcohol because we didn't ever have anything like that. And so people quickly became alcoholics. And it came down through the generations. And also, like, we have many instances of abuse and things like that in the homes. You know, people who were raised up in the boarding school, some of them from the time they was 3 years old, they never had anybody as a role model of what a good parent should be. You know, they was raised in these harsh, sterile environments. When they got hurt, nobody picked them up. Nobody held them or cuddled them. And so you look and it begins to make sense why our society is the way it is. It is historical trauma. And science has identified this thing called epigenetics that, you know, it's this layer on our DNA that holds our historical trauma in our actual DNA. But, you know, I say that if it's so that it holds the trauma, it's also true that it holds the good stuff. And that's what we're going to raise to the top, above the trauma.
Absolutely. What a powerful thing.
You know, it's like you think about the things that, you know, are most vivid in your memory. Those kind of traumatic things you definitely remember. But the other memories are there, too.
That's true.
They're there. When you think about them, they're there.
How do you think you've arrived at where you are with what you're able to offer the community? What gives you strength?
I think I'm exactly where I was meant to be. I think that we all have a purpose, and, you know, we hopefully eventually arrive there. I've been off on many side roads on my way to getting here. But when I was in elementary school, went to Jack Norton Elementary School, little two-room schoolhouse, they had this program. They hired people from our community to come into the schools and teach us our language and how to make baskets. And they taught us about ceremonial dance. And one of the guys that taught us knew bunches of songs from our very own families. And so we each had a song. And we would like go do demonstration brush dances. And then as we got older, we danced in the regular brush dances. And so now that's what I do here at school, teaching those same kinds of things or hiring people to teach those same kinds of things that we learned. Also, I come from a dance family. And so it's in my blood. It's in my DNA.
Mm-hmm. So I was wandering around the resource library with you, and there was a whole section on culturally appropriate curriculum, basketry, and there's a whole bunch of acorns that you've gathered with the young ones, and you're going to process that with them. It's just this tiny little room, and it holds so much knowledge for your instructors and for the young ones. So what advice do you have for educators in that respect? Because I know people are struggling in school districts and with very little funds and all of this.
I would like to claim credit for establishing that library, but I didn't do that. It was my predecessor, Sarah Sapaha, and there was an elderly man, Anthony Risling, who was the Indian Education Director before her. And so a lot of the items in the library came from them. We have added to it since I've been here, but it has been many years in acquiring all the things that go into the library. It is important when you are stocking your library shelves with culturally appropriate things to make sure that they're accurate. Sarah Sapaha had a whole shelf of information on cultural bias in text and in storybooks. And so she was very, very careful about what went on the shelves to make sure it is accurate for that tribe. And she was very active in letting publishers know when their materials were not accurate. In addition to the curriculum and resources, we have a lot of cultural items from this area. For example, the baskets that we use to gather and prepare acorns. So a local lady, Debbie McConnell, made those for us. We hired her to do it. The local curriculum, we hired local educators to put that curriculum together. And then Billy, my coworker, and I created the workbooks to go with it. And we have movies created by our program and also from Shenandoah Films and other places. And we do our best to make sure it's like from original sources that know about the culture and the place and the history.
You mentioned not being museum Indians.
Right.
So my understanding is that baskets are alive and that they need to be used. And often when they're put in museums, they lose their ability to function. They need to be touched.
I remember down at Jump Dance, the World Renewal Ceremony, and I was responsible for making the acorns. And we didn't have an acorn cooking basket, and our neighboring camp was not coming into dance that year. And so I asked her if I could borrow her basket, and she said yes. And so I had it sitting there in my tent. And I had never really cooked with the basket before, and I was afraid I might damage her basket. And so I was cooking my acorns in a pot, and somebody came and they saw that basket sitting in my tent, and they said, oh, there's that basket just crying because you're not using it. So I did not cook my acorns in a pot anymore that dance. I took that basket out and I used it. The materials that the basket is made from and the materials that the regalia is made from, they still have a spirit. Mm-hmm. And their spirit comes to life. It like wakes up when you use it. And it's just like Bertha told me about hazelnuts and, you know, that they weren't producing very many. And she said, well, that's because nobody's picking them. She said, if you pick them, it will make the plant happy and it will produce more.
Yeah, that makes sense on so many levels.
Yeah.
Just physiologically.
Yeah.
Just to be engaged with, and then there's a response.
Yeah.
So those baskets out there in the room are used.
Yes, we definitely use them.
So beautiful. What's on the schedule for the students this school year? What do you have for the young ones in particular? I know you have some field trips and some wonderful activities.
We have a field trip, 4th through 8th grade students, on a trip to visit the dams on the Klamath River. Some of the dams are slated to be taken down. The dam that's lowest on the Klamath River has no fish ladder, and so salmon don't get up any higher than that. So we're taking them to see those dams and to see what those dams are doing to our river. It's so sad, it almost makes you cry, and it hits the students hard. Up above the dams in Klamath Falls is a proposed liquid natural gas pipeline. And so we're going to take the students to that place to show them where they want to put a pipeline underneath our river. And they are, before the trip, learning about the dams and the pipeline in their classrooms. After leaving that proposed pipeline crossing, we're taking them up to one of the headwaters of the Klamath River, where the water comes straight out of the bank through these rocks, and you can put your drinking bottle down there and fill it up and drink the water. And there's this big, beautiful, pristine headwaters pool that is like, this is what our river's supposed to look like. And that's what those students are going to be doing. When we get back, we're going to start doing some acorns. It's the fall. We've had our first rain. The acorns are laying on the ground ready to be picked up. And so we are taking busloads of students here in Hoopaw out to gather acorns, and so that they know, you know, how to identify the tan oak tree and how to identify which ones are good and which ones are not. We took a van load of students out earlier up in Orleans. It was such a wonderful thing. They were so excited and laughing and talking and so happy when they found those big old freshly fallen acorns. They're like, this is Acorn City. This is a nest of acorns. This is so fun. This is, if this was recess, it would be the best one ever.
Oh, that's so good.
It was so cool. And then we'll be having the Acorn Festival here at Hoopa L. So we invite the community in, and they get to eat the acorn soup that the kids have prepared. We have storytellers talking about the acorn maidens, how it is that we got acorns and why it is we eat the tan oaks. We have some student presentations. We have different stations where the kids are cracking and grinding acorns, and they don't want to quit. They don't want to go home. They're the last ones in the building, and their parents are like, let's go, let's go. And they're like, we're almost done.
I love it. Kids not wanting to leave school. How cool is that? How cool is that?
So it's a good time.
Such incredible education that they're understanding the river, the health of the river, and why that health is compromised right now.
Right.
And then you're taking them to a place where it isn't compromised so that they can see that difference.
My hope is that our rivers will be much more healthy post-dam removal, and that seems to be the general consensus that they will be. My hope for the students in doing this is that they will become activists to stand up for the things that are important to our community, the land, the water, the air, and the things that live and breathe on it. My hope is that not only will they stand up for it and be a voice, but they will get the education needed to help protect it. Speaking up for our rights and needs as Native people. Last year, I took a high school student and an eighth grader up to Oregon, and they spoke at a gathering to let them know how the pipeline, if it was allowed to go in, would affect us as Native people down here. And they were eloquent. They were part of a group of youth, so their voice is being heard already as young students.
Yeah, that's so impressive. I'm grateful for the work that you're doing with the youth and with your community, and sounds like you're quite an activist in your own right.
I'm definitely an activist. I've been an activist since my college days when at that time they were spraying herbicides down on the lower Klamath River, and my kids were little. There was like a lot of birth defects, a lot of cancer going on. And then the other thing that was going on was the GO Road, the Gaskie Orleans Road through the prayer country up Dr. Rock.
Yep.
And so I was very active in both of those.
That was a very powerful, very pivotal case, actually.
Right.
Wow, thank you for your efforts in that. I think it's super important, and what a teacher you are for your community.
Many thanks to Margot Robbins, Indian Education Director for the Klamath Trinity School District.